Radio Buddhist Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to the sound of universal compassion. Today we will continue listening to Tenzin's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Davies. Please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello, and once more welcome to the program. In his book, The Heart of Understanding, about the Heart Sutra, Thich Nhat Hanh writes, "Penetration means to enter something, not just stand outside of it. When we want to understand something, we cannot just stand outside and observe it. We have to enter deeply into it and be one with it in order to really understand. If we want to understand a person, we have to feel their feelings, suffer their sufferings, and enjoy their joy." The sutra uses the word penetration to mean full comprehension. The word comprehend is made up of the Latin root com, which means together, within mind, and prehendere, which means to grasp it or to pick it up. So to comprehend something is to pick it up and be one with it. There's no other way to understand something. There's an Indian story about a grain of salt that wanted to know just how salty the ocean was. So it jumped in and became one with the water of the ocean. In this way, the grain of salt gained perfect understanding. If we are concerned with peace and want to understand another country, we can't just stand outside and observe. We have to be one with the citizen of that country in order to understand her feelings, perceptions, and mental formations. Any meaningful work for peace must follow the principle of non-duality, the principle of penetration. This is our peace practice, to penetrate, to be one with, to really understand. That was Thich Nhat Hanh. In this series of programs, we're following Shantideva as a guide to the Bodhisattva's way of life. And last week, we ended on verse 91 of the chapter on meditation, a verse that goes like this. "Although there are many different parts and aspects, such as the hands, as a body that is to be protected, they are one. Likewise, all the different sentient beings in their pleasure and their pain have a wish to be happy that is the same as mine." When we put Thich Nhat Hanh's paragraph side by side with Shantideva's verse, can you see how they complement each other? Shantideva is saying that just as the parts of the body, although different, are equally to be protected against harm, so sentient beings, although in many ways different, all have the same wish to be happy. However, if we recognize this and the desire arises to help all beings attain the happiness we all want, we have to be able to penetrate others' sufferings and joys. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, we have to feel their feelings, suffer their sufferings, and enjoy their joy. We have to identify so strongly with others' experience that, like the grain of salt in the ocean, their experience becomes our own. How do we do this? We can't, after all, just leap in and dissolve into someone else's experiences in life. In the following verses, Shantideva explains how. But before we go any further, let's set our motivation for the program today, praying as we usually do, that it will become the cause for the enlightenment of all beings. Otherwise, if that's too much, direct any positive energy to your own liberation from suffering. Thank you. And now in the theme of penetration, Shantideva says, "The suffering that I experience does not cause any harm to others, but that suffering is mine because of my conceiving of myself as I. Thereby it becomes unbearable. Likewise, the misery of others does not befall me. Nevertheless, by conceiving of others as I, their suffering becomes mine. therefore it too should be hard to bear. Hence I should dispel the misery of others, because it is suffering, just like my own, and I should benefit others, because they are sentient beings, just like myself. When we feel suffering, we know very well that it is afflicting that I that we so strongly identify with and cling to. We see this I being threatened, being coerced out of its comfort zone, and so the suffering becomes intense. Of course, others do not experience this suffering because they are not identifying with that particular I. They are involved with another I altogether. Only when their sense of I is harmed will they experience suffering. So, Shantideva says, if we can really penetrate others' experience, when we can conceive of their I the same as my I, we will then understand how difficult their suffering is to bear. It is this identification with others, not as different from ourselves, that lays the foundation for our being able to really empathize and so take on the responsibility of freeing them from their sufferings, in the same way as I free myself of suffering. Pema Chodron in her commentary explains, the cause of our suffering is our concept of ourselves as a separate continuous self. Whatever we cling to as me and mine, our body, our spouse, emotions, possessions or friends, causes us to suffer. The intensity of our pain, according to the Buddha and Shantideva, is dependent on the intensity of our clinging to an impermanent, ungraspable I. If this is true, how can we go beyond this central reference point of self? We do it simply and directly by recognizing that other people are just like me. This practice reveals that we all have the same fear of suffering, the same desire for happiness. This realization frees up the kindness of our heart. Maybe we feel that our own suffering is already more than we can bear. Maybe this is why we don't want to relate to someone else's pain. When we understand that their suffering is no different than ours, however, something shifts. The fearful heart of ego begins to melt. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama, in his commentary, A Flash of Lightning in the Dark of Night, writes, our own sufferings, though not felt by others, are certainly hard for us to bear. So it is natural that we should try to protect ourselves from suffering. Similarly, others' pain, even if we do not feel it, is no less unbearable for them. But as we are related to other beings, as we owe them our gratitude, and they help us in our practice, let us try to dispel their suffering as well as ours. All beings will equally want to be happy, so why should we be the only ones to get happiness? Why should we be protected from suffering and others not be? Now you might ask what His Holiness means by saying we are related to other beings and owe them our gratitude. Well, for one thing, as we have mentioned in an earlier program, all beings at some stage have been our kind parents. When the Buddha was enlightened and looked back at all his previous lives, he could not find a first one. They stretched back beginninglessly. Now, if that's so for us, then in a great many of those lives we've had, we had a mother and a father. And as the mothers and fathers are not necessarily the same from one life to the next, we've had countless mothers and fathers. We cannot point to any being and say that that being has never been our kind parent. And this is one way in which we are related to all beings. And you can't say that the kindness of our present parents is greater than the kindness of our previous parents. For the separation between parents and their kindness is only a matter of time. They may have had different cultures and practices, but the parents of different lives were equally kind to us in bringing us up, giving us food, shelter, and protection. Is the kindness of the human parent any different to the kindness of the lioness parent? When I first became ordained and went to the monastery in South India, one of the first monks to visit me in my room was the one who spoke the best English in the hostel we were housed in. As a young boy in Tibet, he told me he had remembered his previous life, which he had spent not far from where he lived with his present life family. He told his parents about it, and they took him to meet his previous family. After listening to the boy, the previous family confirmed that he'd been their son, and in fact, he identified more strongly with them than with his present birth family. Eventually, he went to live with them. Now, although he may have preferred one family over the other, it doesn't change the kindness that both families had shown him. In fact, I think it must have been quite hard for his mother of this life to give up her boy to the other family, but she did it. So this is one kind of gratitude that we should have for other sentient beings who've all been our kind parents at some time. And then, if we look closely at everything we enjoy, we will see that it all critically depends on the kindness of others. The food we eat is grown by others, harvested and processed by others, prepared for sale by others, and sold or given to us by others. If the wheat was not planted, harvested, and processed by others, how could we drop into a supermarket and pick up a loaf of bread? If a sheep had not given its wool, a shearer had not sheared the sheep, a weaver had not woven the wool, and the knitter had not knitted the jumper, how could you have bought it to keep yourself warm against the cold? Is there one thing that you use and enjoy that is not dependent on other sentient beings? That apple that we pluck to enjoy from the apple tree depends on the worms aerating the soil, the various types of animals and insects that keep the soil fertilized, and so on. We cannot point to any one thing and say, no being has been involved in the production of that. Going back in its history, we will find many beings have, in one way or another, contributed to the creation of that thing. So again, we cannot point to any being and say, you have never benefited me ever. Directly or indirectly, intentionally or unintentionally, every being has made a contribution to our enjoyment and happiness. And even if they've been antagonistic to us, they've been kind in giving us the opportunity to practice patience, compassion, and forbearance. If we didn't take that opportunity, it's not their fault, but our own. So we can see that no matter how other beings act towards us, they are always offering us a way to progress spiritually or even just to become a better person. Therefore, we owe them a debt of gratitude, at least. It is also taught that without other beings, it would be impossible to reach nirvana or Buddhahood. Why? Because to reach those states, we have to practice to overcome our negative states of mind. And how do we do that? We have to use other beings. For instance, if no other beings made us as ordinary people angry or irritated, how could we practice patience? If everybody was our friend and never upset us, we could not overcome the latencies for anger and resentment in our minds. We need others to point out to us where we are liable to go wrong and where we need to do the most work on ourselves. It is so for all the many suffering-orientated imprints in our mind. So others are invaluable for our work on the path to enlightenment, whether they are kind to us or not. Some Tibetan monks, I've heard, regard the time they spent in Chinese communist prisons, where they underwent terrible hardships and torture, as the most productive time of their lives. They were able to use their experiences to increase their love, compassion, and patience in ways they could never have done had they led more ordinary lives. This shows that it doesn't matter what situation we find ourselves in, we can still derive benefit from others. And once again, that leads to gratitude. With this as a basis, we can read the next couple of verses in the Shantideva text. When both myself and others are similar in that we wish to be happy, what is so special about me? Why do I strive for my happiness alone? And when both myself and others are similar in that we do not wish to suffer, what is so special about me? Why do I protect myself and not others? Shantideva continues with the theme of equalizing self and others, which is a precursor to considering why we should in fact exchange our usual self-cherishing attitude for an other-cherishing attitude. The author in this chapter is using bodhicitta as his object of meditation and showing us how to develop that motivation through analytical meditations. Here, he concludes that as we all equally want happiness and to be free from suffering, No reason can be given for us to work only for our own happiness and release from suffering. We're not special in our desire, and in fact we could argue that as I'm only one and others are uncountable, if it came down to who should have happiness and freedom from suffering, they should, because the happiness of many is worth more than the happiness of only one, even if I am that only one. But now an objection arises. In the next verse, Shantideva plays devil's advocate against himself. But why should I protect them if their suffering does not cause me any harm? Then why protect myself against future sufferings if it causes me no harm now? It is a mistaken conception to think that I should experience the suffering of my next life, for it is another person who dies and another that will be reborn. Why should we protect others if their suffering causes us no difficulty, he asks. This is a standard question when selfish people are asked to help others. Why, they might say, it's got nothing to do with me. In other words, I'm not the one in trouble, why should I bother? Shantideva counters this argument with another question. Why would you then protect yourself from future sufferings if they cause you no difficulty now? And explains that you might think that you will be the same person in your next life, but in fact, it will be a completely different person. For example, if I, Tenzin, am born a donkey in my next life, I will not conceive of myself as Tenzin, but just in a donkey's body. I will be a donkey's persona in a donkey's body. The Tenzin I and the donkey I will be quite different. Pema Chodron refines the argument and shows that even the I of a moment in this life is not the same I in another moment. She writes, logically we might say, if a knife cuts me, it hurts. This is obviously why I protect myself. But if the knife cuts you, I don't feel a thing, so why should I be concerned? Shantideva refutes this argument by saying that the I we are constantly trying to protect today, tomorrow, next week, is not the same I of this moment. It is constantly changing and perishing. Every second, another I is born. And, as His Holiness also points out, because what we think of as I is a succession of instants in a continuum of consciousness, the I of the moment that will suffer in the future is different from the I of the present moment. Think about it. Although when we casually think about me, it appears that it is the same me from one moment to the next, the same me through the days, weeks, and years, it is not. What has survived from when you were a baby to now? Is there really something that you can point to and say, that was me then, and it is the same me now? Everything has changed. Your body, your mind, your outlook, everything. The only thing we can point to is a continuum from that time to now. But it is an ever-changing continuum. Even the I that you experienced a moment ago has in subtle, and maybe not so subtle ways, changed in the traverse to this moment. As Buddha said, everything is impermanent, meaning changing instant by instant. And that applies to us, no matter how much we grasp at some stability and permanence in our lives. So Shantideva points out that if you do things to protect your eyes of the future, which are all different, why should you not also attempt to protect the other eyes that are also all different from each other? You have no basis for differentiation. But then another objection arises, Shantideva again taking the role of self-centered devil's advocate. Surely, whenever there is suffering, the sufferer must protect himself from it. But the suffering of the foot is not that of the hand. Why then does it protect it? His Holiness glosses the verse this way. If one were to think that everyone should take care of his or her own suffering, one could argue that the hand should protect only itself and no other part of the body. There's no reason why the hand should protect the foot. Although we might find this argument convenient, it's not at all logical. Now let's stop being stubborn and thinking only of ourselves. And Pema Chodron also points out that from a conventional point of view, the practices of equality appear silly. Whoever suffers should take care of him or herself, she writes. This rationale makes sense from our ordinary perspective. I'll take care of me, you take care of you. Shantideva's reply comes in the last two lines of this verse. Again, he uses the analogy of the body. Obviously, the hand will protect the foot from harm. If we accept this as reasonable, why should we dismiss the idea that separate beings could also relate as parts of a whole? When someone is hurting, we see them as other. So how do we come to know we're not isolated beings? One way is to reflect that by not helping them, we are harming ourselves. Working with this notion again and again, what starts as a practice becomes real understanding. Whatever happens to any one of us affects the whole. If you think about it seriously, this type of interdependent thinking makes perfect sense. When we don't take care of one another, I suffer, you suffer, the whole world suffers. And then Shantideva continues, although this may not be justified, it is done because of grasping in itself. But surely whatever is not justified for myself or others should at all costs be rejected. Now the next objection is that, although it may not make logical sense, the reason we protect ourselves and not others is our grasping at a real independent self, what Pema Chodron calls ego clinging. The self appears to be separate from the independent self of others. But Shantideva says that if it is illogical for all of us, we should ditch it and have nothing more to do with it. We could say it is doubly illogical to act on an illogical motivation. Pema Chodron describes it like this. We live in a painful, self-centered prison called me. This misperception causes pain for everyone. How do we undercut the self-absorption that separates us? How do we become more broad-minded and open-hearted? We do the practice of just like me. Such things as a continuum and an aggregation are false in the same way as a rosary and an army, says Shantideva. There's no real owner of suffering. Therefore, who has control over it? Being no inherent owner of suffering, there can be no distinction at all between that of myself and others. Thus I shall dispel it because it hurts. Why am I so certain that I shouldn't eliminate the suffering of others? Here Shantideva presents emptiness as an argument for equalizing self and others. We've spoken of ourselves as nothing more than a continuum, or we could say a set of aggregates. But if you conceive of a continuum as something independent and inherently existing, you're making the same mistake as thinking that a rosary is an independent thing, or an army. Well, take an army for instance. We think of an army as a real thing, even though it is just a collection of soldiers. We can ask, is the army this soldier or that soldier? Is it that soldier over there? And we can point to small groups of soldiers with the same question. Are those the army? Each time, the answer is no. When exactly does the group of soldiers become an army? Only when the mind labels it so. If I take soldiers one by one from the army, when does the army stop being an army? Only when the mind says so. There is no independent thing called an army. The army is dependent on enough soldiers being present and at least one mind labeling the group of soldiers by the name army. Other than that, no army exists. A rosary can be viewed similarly, and we will come to the conclusion that it exists only in dependence on the string and the beads and the conditions that bring them together, plus the mind that labels rosary. Does the rosary exist in any other way? Similarly, when suffering strikes, you cannot point to an independent separate self, continuum, set of aggregates, or owner of the suffering. Where does the continuum exist? At one instance of the continuum, at another, or at a group of instances along the continuum? And how large does the number of instances have to be for them to be called a continuum? Only the mind can say. Thus the concept of a real and independent continuum of existence is false. And if that is the case, Shantideva says, since there are no real selves or owners of suffering, we cannot distinguish between the experiences of the suffering. There's only the suffering. And because it hurts, we should dispel it wherever it arises. in the illusory continuum or aggregates of, that is merely labeled I or merely labeled other. When we talk about I and beings, these are not independent entities, writes His Holiness the Dalai Lama. They are false labels applied to a continuum of impermanent elements, just as necklace is applied to a string of beads or army to a collection of soldiers. And then Shantideva brings up another objection, but uses it again to prove his point. But since neither the suffering nor the sufferer truly exist, why should I turn away the misery of all? This is no ground for argument, for if I prevent my own sufferings, surely I should prevent the sufferings of all. If not, since I'm just like other sentient beings, I should not prevent my own suffering either. Okay, the argument goes, so since all is illusion, both the person who suffers and the suffering itself, why on earth should I worry about the misery of all others? It is, after all, not real, being just illusion, as you yourself point out. But Shantideva counters the argument by saying that if we do not try to stop the suffering of others, why should we stop our own sufferings, since we are all the same? His Holiness says that although the I does not truly exist, in relative truth, everyone wants to avoid suffering. And this is good enough reason for dispelling both our own and others' sufferings. What is the use of discriminating, he asks. Pema Chodron also points out that at the absolute level, of course, there is no reason to suffer. But at the conventional level, she says, we're all in considerable pain. The cause of our discontent, Shantideva insists, is our mistaken feeling of separateness. This isn't based on anything tangible. It's based on beliefs and concepts. The duality of subject and object, self and other, is an illusion imputed by the mind. The absolute understanding is arrived at through the practice of letting go. Meanwhile, we can work at the level of everyday pain and treat other people's sufferings as our own. In his book, The Sun, My Heart, Thich Nhat Hanh writes that seeing and loving go together. There are times while watching our children play that we think about the future, he writes. We know that life is filled with worries, fears, hopes and disappointments. And we worry for them and anxiously think about the struggles before them. It is at that very moment that we enter into our children. It is easy to find our way into them because we know they are of our own blood. Meditation is the same. As we meditate on the interdependent nature of all things, we can penetrate reality easily and see the fears, anguish, hopes, and despair of all beings. Watching a green caterpillar on a leaf, we understand the importance of the caterpillar, not just from our self-centered point of view as a human, but from the penetration based on the interdependence of all things. Realizing the preciousness of life of every being, we dare not deprive the caterpillar of its life. If someday we have to kill a caterpillar, we will feel as if we're killing ourselves, that something of ourselves dies with the caterpillar. And now time is up, and that's where we will have to stop today. Please, as usual, dedicate any positive potential from the program to the enlightenment of all beings. Thank you for joining us today, and I hope you will join us again next week. Goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering.